I think we see this big picture and we forget about the little picture inside, and suddenly you start seeing some trouble. Right now, everything is fine and everybody's happy and they think that everything's in good shape, but it really isn't. And you're seeing a lot of concerns. And I think you start to get reassurances from different organizations, which is the same as when they tell a coach, hey, your job is safe, and then they fire him the next day. When you start getting reassurances, and I go back to 2008 in September when Paulson came out and said the banks were great.
Hello and welcome back to Soar Financially. Thank you so much for joining on this channel where we discuss the macro to understand the micro. My name is Kai Hoffman. I'm the @JR Mining Guy on Twitter and the CEO of the Soar Financial Group. Really appreciate you joining us today because we have a fantastic conversation lined up with Todd Horowitz. He's the founder of Bubba Trading. And be reminded, he's been a guest on the program before. When I talk to traders, I usually speed up as well. So if you want to do that, there's a little wheel on YouTube. You can actually slow down the conversation as well. We always talk fast. So lots of information in a really jam-packed session here. I'm really looking forward to the next 20, 25 minutes here with Todd Horowitz because we got lots to discuss. It's been a while since he's been on. The economic picture and outlook has changed a little bit. We were going to talk about the Fed. What's the S&P 500 or S&P 5000 doing now? How is gold holding up? And of course, we're going to ask him where he's making his money right now. Where does he see some opportunity? Before I switch over to my guest, hit that subscribe and like button as well. It shows us that we're bringing on the right guests, asking the right questions, of course, as well. And it helps us grow. It helps us bring guests like Todd back on the channel more often as well. Thank you so much for tuning in. Now let's switch over to my guest. And here we go. Todd, it's great to have you back on the program. It's good to see you. How's your hangover?
And Kai, it's always great to be with you. It's a pleasure, and I look forward to it.
Yeah, hangover. Sorry, it's like we were chatting off camera here for a second about the Super Bowl in Las Vegas, so my mind went there immediately. So apologize for that. But how was the Super Bowl? I have to ask you, like, since you're in Vegas, you're one of the few people I know that are in Vegas. How hyped was the city? How was the event?
The city was hyped up, unbelievable. It's always a big event in Vegas, and then to have the game here actually was really wild, and it forced me to stay away from going anywhere near it because the traffic was ridiculous. But it was very big for the town, and it was a huge success. And Las Vegas will be in the rotation. So from 10 years ago, never going to have a team. Now they're going to have four teams, and they're going to be in the Super Bowl rotation. So pretty good for Vegas.
Oh, fantastic. No, I like it. It's, of course, the entertainment capital of the world, right? So they know how to put on a good show. Fantastic. But it's been a while since you've been on. I think we need to recap a bit, like how the economy is doing. Let's start with a bit of a ground setting, like a fundamental question. How do you feel about the economy and the financial markets right now?
Well, I think the economy stinks. I think that we've got, we're getting a false narrative by the equity markets because they continue to make new highs while people continue to get laid off. Jobs are being gone by major corporations. We're seeing a lack of opportunity. We're seeing a lot of inflation, which they told us was going away. So we're not getting a break in any one spot except for the, if you draw a new line above the top of the middle class, those are the people that are enjoying the ride. Those below it are just getting hammered. And, again, you can look at the equity and say, oh, they're going up. But if you're not a participant, which basically 15% of the mass population is really an overall participation in markets, then you're really not benefiting. And if you don't own your own home, and you're renting, you're getting killed. So between the high cost of groceries, the high cost of everything else, you're not really having a very good time right now. And so it's kind of the tale of two cities. You've got an equity market making new highs, and you've got a Fed that built this whole rally on a potential rate cut. Now, how are they going to cut rates with the numbers that they're reporting? If you believe the numbers that they're reporting, how are they possibly going to cut rates? They're not. That this is. So I would say that although I'm long here, I think this rally is about to give it in.
Yeah, absolutely. No, let's talk about that. I want to, analyze that divergence a little bit between the real economy and the stock market, like the S&P 5000, it is called now, is holding steady. It's, I think, 50-30 as we're speaking here today, Todd. Where is that momentum coming from? Like you mentioned, of course, that, the announced rate cuts are fuel to the market rally fire here. But let's analyze that a bit.
Well, the whole rally was built back in October when, Chair Powell said, well, we're going to look to start cutting rates in March of next year. So, of course, the markets went straight up. And, of course, people are still banking on that there may be a cut, but he's already made it clear that there's no cuts. And I think that you look at the inflation, which first of all is reported incorrectly because it only counts 4% for food and energy. Well, I got news for you. Other than an emergency, the average person spends more than 4% for food and energy. So that's a misnomer that we have to deal with. You've got a bunch of political mess coming out here that is broadcasting numbers that are not accurate. And of course, money's got to go somewhere. And there is an overwhelming surplus in the money supply. And you've got, you know, banks lending. I think the banks are over leveraged. And of course, you know, they can take money and borrow from the Fed, turn that into an asset, and then lend out 10 times that amount. So you're creating a lot of leverage for a lot of the upper side. And of course, where's that money going to go? It's going to go into the equity market, which is what we've seen. And we've seen a pretty dramatic rally, especially in the NASDAQ. I mean, you know, you've seen this record run that has pushed us up the numbers that are unbelievable. And at the end of the day, I think we're very close to the end of this move here. It'll depend if we can take out these highs here. But you see that it looks like the greed factor is playing in right now, which means that the average investor is now trying to get in. And usually that's a pretty good sign that it may be over.
Yeah, that's NVIDIA is reporting next week. And, you know, Reuters is even reporting about it. It's like people getting positioned. Should we go long or short NVIDIA before the earnings?
Well, I don't usually play right before earnings unless I'm going to use them to try to sell some premium and put on a big position. But NVIDIA's had a heck of a run. I mean, I don't know how much higher it can go. But, you know, you look at SMCI, it went up 200% in 3 weeks. So, you know, right now we're in that 90s internet bubble type of situation where stocks just go to Pluto out of nowhere. And, of course, they're very thin. And what people have to remember is that on the other side of every trade is always a go-between or a market maker, and they're not going to give it away. So if the demand starts to pick up, they're going to widen the bid-offer spreads, and it means that the jumps are going to be bigger as they go up. And I think that this is NVIDIA trading at, you know, 800 or so. I mean, it could go much higher. It could crack after the earnings. I have really no clue where it's going to go. My assumption would be it would go lower because they have to have priced in pretty good earnings already.
Okay. That was just a curious question because, like, of course, the S&P 5000 is carried mostly by 6-7 stocks, right? The Magnificent
Seven. It's actually the S&P 500, but...
I know. I call it the S&P 5000 because it's broken that price level. So I'm trying to be a bit funny here as well.
Gotcha. Okay.
So that's where that is coming from, right? But
yeah, it's really been carried. The whole thing's been run by 6 or 7 stocks. I mean, you know, the big high tech, which has exploded higher. And, you know, listen, it is what it is. And you can't fight it. I mean, we've been long throughout most of this rally. Not that I want to be, but of course, remember, you can't fight what the markets are doing. And that's one of the big things everybody has to remember is no matter what you think, no matter what the news says, the tape is the all story. And the close of the market is where it's at. And if you're against it, you're losing money.
Absolutely. Yeah. We talked about the Fed earlier, like how they're adding fuel to the market rally fire here. Powell was extremely dovish in December. He's been paddling back just based also on the data he's been looking at. We got PPI data this morning as well. What do you expect? Like, I feel like we might actually see a rate cut, rate hike before we see a rate cut actually this year.
I think rates are going higher. And I think that the bond markets tell you that they're going higher. And I never believed that they were going to be able to cut rates. But again, that was the story. But if you look at the bond markets, you know, the bond market futures are inverse to interest rates. So if bond market futures are going down, that means interest rates are going higher. The 10-year has hit like 4.3 for the first time in quite a while. After hitting 5% last year, broke all the way down under 4. Now it's back to, like, you know, 4.3, 4.4. And again, to me, that's the biggest benchmark that replaced LIBOR for mortgage markets. And to me, it's going higher. Look at the rates of mortgages. I mean, you got 7% mortgages now. And I that's still relatively cheap if you're an old guy like me, because my first mortgage was 13%. But if you're a new home buyer that bought, you know, in the last 10 years, you were paying, you know, 3-4%. So again, it's all what you're used to. But I think that rates are going higher. And I think that before it's all said and done, that 10-year is going to be about 5 or 6%.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, the discussion we often have is like, what's the new normal? As well, you mentioned 13% back in the day was normal, right? Now we're looking at 5. Everybody said, "Oh, this is way too high. This is not normal." Like in context, like how normal is 5% for you?
Money is too cheap, and that's what's applying and making us in such deep debt is because money is too cheap. You know, but no, what people don't remember or realize is that not everybody has the luxury of the benefit of getting that cheap money. I mean, you have in this country. the highest amount of credit card debt. Now, I'm not thinking about dollars because dollars are, you know, when I started trading, the Dow was 800. So now it's 40,000. But we have the highest number of people at limit on at least one credit card paying the minimum payment. Now, you know how long it takes to pay a credit card bank. It's longer than a mortgage if you're paying the minimum payment every month. And I think that the consumer is way too stressed out. I believe that if you did a real honest to goodness stress test on the banks, you'd find out that the banks were way over leveraged as well. And I think that's a problem that nobody's talking about either.
Yeah, like how can you pay credit card debt back that is at 20%, 25% annually? Like, how is that even possible? And how is that even legal? That's the other.
The credit card lobby, unfortunately, gets away with usury rates like loan sharks. It's a bad deal for the consumer because bankruptcy debt is not even dischargeable. I mean, credit card debt is not dischargeable by bankruptcy anymore either. Mm-hmm. So even if you get deep into debt, you're still going to have to pay that credit card back. They've created a real monster here with the pounding in the money into the money supply, with manipulating the dollars. And of course, that takes us to the fiat currency system itself, which is a corrupt criminal system to begin with.
Yeah. Let's talk U.S. dollar in a second. I just want to stay on the Fed for a second because the Fed's President Barr was out presenting somewhere at one of the universities, of course, pre-prepared remarks, everything. But he said very clearly that they're watching the commercial real estate sector in particular, because a lot of refinancings need to happen here soon. How critical do you see the commercial real estate sector? And is that maybe the straw that breaks the camel's back?
Well, I got to assume, Kai, that they have that pretty much priced in. It's not a surprise. This has been coming for years. You know, ever since COVID, we know that there's no longer big cities that people have to go into an office anymore. So the market, the commercial real estate market is shrinking. I don't think it's a big surprise. I think the straw that breaks the camel's back is going to be banks are going to start to fail again as they did in 2008. You know, I think we see this big picture and we forget about the little picture inside, and suddenly you start seeing some trouble. Right now, everything is fine and everybody's happy and they think that everything's in good shape, but it really isn't. And you're seeing a lot of concerns. And I think you start to get reassurances from different organizations, which is the same as when they tell a coach, hey, your job is safe, and then they fire him the next day. When you start getting reassurances, and I go back to 2008 in September when Paulson came out and said the banks were great, well, guess what? They weren't. And I don't think they're great now. I think that the banks are in a lot of trouble. And unfortunately, the taxpayer gets to bail out the banks because the Fed will do the same thing they did in 2008.
Yeah. No, we've seen that just last year as well, where they just said, well, we're just going to bail out everybody, 100% blank check, more or less. Not the FDIC limits or anything. It was just 100% of the banks were more or less bailed out, and savers as well, which is crazy. Crazy. John, we got to talk a bit about as well, where do you see some opportunity in the markets as well? Like, we're always talking about the negative, but if there's a lot of negative news, there's got to be something positive happening on the other side as well. Where are you making your money right now?
Well, I mean, listen, I've been long the I've been long the equity, so that's been okay. And, you know, I think that I've been playing gold and silver. I think they're getting ready to make a move higher once again here. I think that the real play in these markets now is, if you play commodities, is the grain space right now. I mean, grains are levels we haven't seen for so long, I can't remember. And, you know, either there's going to be a shortage in food next year because farmers aren't going to be able to plant, or we're going to see a dramatic price recovery here. And to me, that's where I'm looking to, that I've been watching very closely, looking for some opportunity to get in there, because I think that we're going to see a pretty dramatic rally. I mean, the funds have had total control of the shorts and have been pushing these markets lower. But I do think that we're going to see a little bit of a bounce in here. And to me, that would be a place to look at. And of course, look, wherever equities are always an opportunity, you know, because you can hold them. Again, if you're playing with money you don't have, then you shouldn't be in the markets at all. But if you have money, then you should be investing in a variety of things, including the precious metals and the equity markets, because listen, equities have gone up 8.5% year over year. It's for the history of the markets. So if you're buying good companies, then you can continue to invest. If you're looking for immediate gratification, that's not what trading is about. That's not what investing is about. It's about delayed gratification. You have to be patient enough to be able to wait for it, which means that you can't be putting money in that's for the mortgage payment or the car payment.
Yeah. Todd, you're one of the few guests I feel comfortable asking about cocoa. Personally, I don't know much about it. All I see is that hockey stick chart, which is absolutely crazy. What's driving demand in cocoa right now?
I think there's a little bit of a shortage of cocoa, and obviously it's a very controlled, slow moving commodity. I mean, it's a fast moving commodity, but it's a short crop, so to speak, and it's been going straight up until basically today. Okay, but basically, you get a little bit of a shortage, you get a little bit of a run, and of course, one of the big things that drives markets is what they call a big short squeeze. You know, there's a lot of people trying to short those markets that were going up and they wouldn't go down. And suddenly they chase after them. Don't be surprised if we see a pretty dramatic sell-off in cocoa right now, because again, the big push up was more on short covering and people having to chase it up and force to cover into a market that's not that liquid. And of course, once everybody is covered, it's the same old story. It goes back down.
Yeah. Now that we've talked about it, it's time to short anyway. So that's usually what happens once we get into a market, or I'm usually too late anyway. So might as well short it now. We're going to talk about gold and silver in a second. I quickly want to touch on oil, also given sort of the geopolitical tensions worldwide. Red Sea is the number one factor here. How do you see the oil price developing? We're just trading at about $78 a barrel right now, which in my opinion is a few dollars too low given, you know, all the macro events and macro factors that are weighing on the oil price. Where do you see oil headed?
This is an interesting question, because the oil would tell you that the economy is pretty weak. If it's holding at these lower levels, it should be higher. And, you know, if Saudi Arabia and OPEC are not cutting production and trying to force prices higher, they recognize how weak the worldwide economy is as well. And I think that, again, oil should be higher. But again, I don't think people can afford it. And if they force prices too high, I think they're going to lose their edge on the markets. And that's where the problem comes in. It's trying to weigh that fine line of the economy, because if you push prices too much higher, people aren't going to be able to afford to drive, aren't going to be able to afford to do anything. And we have to remember that 80% approximately of everything we do is involved with fossil fuels, from the delivering, from driving your car, to the plastics in your water bottle, and a lot of things that nobody realizes that is made with a fossil fuel. So again, if they push prices too high, it's going to price the average consumer out, and it's going to be not good for anybody.
No, absolutely. Yeah. So $78. I personally think it should be $95, just given, you know, the interruption.
I agree. But again, I don't think the economy can take the $95. I think that's where we're seeing it hold. I think it should be probably over in the hundreds. But again, the economy is weak. And if it's weak, that's one of the key components that tells you how weak the economy really is.
Maybe a question as well. The U.S. is the largest producer of oil right now. Maybe there's too much independence maybe from the Middle East right now as well, so that we can rely on a cheaper oil price right now?
Well, the U.S. has just gone back into reproduction. And I think that, again, the demand is way down. It doesn't matter. And of course, a lot of the countries haven't refilled their strategic reserves back up yet either. There's a lot of issues here that really all relate back to what's going on in the overall economy, which is really a pretty ugly picture.
Absolutely. It's definitely not looking rosy out there. Is that maybe one of the reasons the gold price is hanging in there as well? We got to talk about the precious metals. It briefly dipped below 2000 again this week after we got some data from, inflation data. We got, and the market was worried, okay, the Fed might actually raise rates again. So the question is, like, how volatile is the gold price right now? What's driving the price and what's holding it where it is right now?
Well, really, gold stuck between 2000 and 2100. I mean, yeah, dip below for a minute, but it's really just in consolidation, and it looks like it wants to go higher. I think gold will make a new high this year. I think that you're seeing also a little bit of competition from crypto as well, from Bitcoin. Bitcoin's had quite a move right now, and a lot of investors are using that as some stored asset value as well. But I think that gold will be just fine, and gold will probably, you know, get to 2300, 2400 this year, in my opinion. I think silver will get into the 30s this year. My biggest concern is platinum, because I think platinum is a heck of a value down here, but it just doesn't seem to move. And, you know, at one time platinum was over the price of gold, now it's under. And I think the big thing we also have to look at is the gold silver ratio, which is, I don't know, has ever been this high before.
Yeah, it's about 90, I believe it is. I checked yesterday. So it was about 90, 88, 90 roughly. So there's lots of room in silver, of course, as well. Let's talk silver. Let's talk about gold's little brother here for a second. Why is it lagging gold so much?
there's just a lot of sellers out there, and there's a lot of pressure on it, as it always is. And it'll take a big short squeeze, as we saw when it went to 50, if you remember back in the day. It'll take a short squeeze, and it'll take some real buyers to step in and force the shorts to cover. But I think long term, I think silver is a heck of an investment here. And certainly, again, it's an investment in physical. I don't want to be a buyer of paper. I don't think there's enough paper, silver or gold, to cover the amount. I don't think there's enough physical to cover the amount of paper that's been written for gold and silver. And I think you better be very careful to what you're buying. And I think that physical is the way to buy if you're going to buy the precious metals, because, again, I don't believe there's enough metals in the world to cover the paper that's out there on it.
No, absolutely. I think I agree with you there on that one. I had a guest on yesterday or 2 days ago. We even talked about silver becoming a monetary metal again, but there's simply not enough of it as well. Not at the current price levels, if we're to sort of convert it to money right now as well. So it's an interesting topic for sure. Todd, you touched on the bond rates and bond interest rates as well in a previous answer. Sort of the last two topics I want to cover is the bond market right now. And then we have to finish, since you're in the U.S., we have to finish talking about the U.S. elections and how that sort of fits into everything as well. But let's start with the bond yields. We've had a massive bond auction earlier in February. How did that go? Like, how did that impact bond prices? And how do you see the bond market developing here in general?
Well, I think the bond market is going a lot lower, which, again, would push interest rates a lot higher. And that's my opinion. I may be wrong, but I don't see how there's any chance that we're going to go lower. I mean, there's not enough real demand for bonds to push prices higher. And I think interest rates are mispriced here. I think that when you look at what Powell is saying, and it was interesting, he was on 60 Minutes and they asked him about the 2% target for inflation. He goes, I don't know why we use a 2% target, basically. And at the end of the day, they've made a mess of the economy. They have made a mess of the amount of debt that we're carrying. They've made a mess with the jobs, because in 2023, 63% of the jobs were either government or special interest jobs. So we've created a real mess, and now we're getting massive amounts of layoffs. So I think that interest rates are going to go higher, because they put themselves into a spot that they can only go higher from here.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Where do you see bond yields end the year, roughly? Do you have a guesstimate?
I think the 10-year will end about 6%.
Sure. Yeah. Okay, we're trading about 4.2 right now, I believe, last I checked. So right around there. So that's a 50% revaluation to a degree as well. So interesting. Let's throw in the U.S. elections into the whole mix. And I'm curious what your stance is. Like, I don't want to get into a political debate. I'm just more curious, like, what the market impacts are of any given result. What are your thoughts on that? And I don't know, given the current market where we're at, maybe who would you like to see in the White House in 2025, given the current market environment?
Well, I certainly wouldn't want to see the current administration in the market in the office again. They're ridiculous. And again, I think that both sides of the aisle are corrupt. Okay, so I'm not a big fan of either side. I'm more down in the middle. But I thought that when Trump was in office, the economy ran a lot better. There wasn't as much debt. There wasn't as much what's going on in this country. The election itself, election years typically are higher. The only election year I can remember that was lower was 2008. So again, there's a bias to the upside. There's a little bit of concern in my eyes that the party in power now is not at all, doesn't seem to be at all concerned about what's going on. Like, they have no chance of losing, which tells me there might be some funny business going on. But markets, I don't think the markets are too thrilled with the current president. However, the cheap money overwhelms the price of who's the president, right? The Fed had made this bet. And of course, the Fed chair is more powerful than anybody, because he controls the money. So I think that, you know, that there should be a change, but it may be a change within the party itself. But at the end of the day, I don't think that the stock market will perform well. If it looks like Biden is going to win, I do not think that the markets will perform well. I think they will fall apart, because, again, I think that people are realizing the damage that has been done to the economy while this administration has been in power.
Yeah, people tend to vote with their wallets as well. So I'm curious, like, do you see any more gifts being, what do you call it? It's like not issued. What do you do with gifts given out? Any more gifts given out before the U.S. election?
More free stuff. I mean, listen, they're importing, you know, all the illegal immigrants that they're going to let vote. They're bringing in. I mean, again, that's part of the problem that we have here, that nobody realizes that they allow a lot of them to vote. Okay, you know, the mail-in voting, the whole system, you know, has always been a little bit suspect. But the better technology gets, the more suspect elections become. And I don't care which side, either side of the aisle. It just, who's the better crook this year?
Absolutely. It is tough. Like, being from Europe as well, like, the U.S. election system is always a big puzzle to us, and how it works and how it's still so archaic, maybe a bit, like how it operates, right? It's interesting. It's always fun to watch because I'm an outsider looking in, so I don't have a horse in the race.
Not so fun if you're an insider and you're here.
some things I don't want to be involved in. Politics is one of them. So that's where I'm staying far, far away. Todd, as always, like, 25 minutes. This was just, I usually have guests on. We talk for an hour. We get less information across. So always appreciate your time. Where can we find more of your work? Where can we follow you, Todd?
BubbaTrading.com. And if you like, I have a book that I've written that's on Amazon, but I'm happy to give the PDF file away to your audience. And if they want it, they can email me direct at BubbaTrading.com, and I'll sell them Bubba's Guide to Trading Options.
Oh, fantastic. Awesome. I think that's a field I still need to learn about as well, because we talked about NVIDIA earlier. I still need to learn how to trade options properly on the long end and short end. So buying puts and long calls there. I'm curious how that works, because I think you can make quite a bit of money coming up here, and especially going short at some point. So in my opinion. Yeah. Fantastic. Boa, thank you so much for your time. I truly appreciate it. And everybody else, thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this rapid fire discussion here with Todd Horowitz. If you haven't done so, make sure to follow him as well. Go to his website for the free PDF as well. Reach out to him. I think that is well worth your time and effort to do so. And if you haven't done so, hit that like and subscribe button down below as well. It helps us gauge, like, the quality of guests, the questions we ask, the content we produce. Is that something that you like and are interested in? We really appreciate your feedback, of course, and we'll be back with lots more content. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll be back with more. Thank you.